hardly ever hear cars driving by, and it's just so peaceful. It helps to clear the mind, especially after a long day. As she spoke, I felt for the measure of her words, sensing her desire to keep our conversation on safe footing.
I'll bet.
I need to clean some hooves, she announced. You want to help?
I don't know what to do, I admitted.
It's easy, she said. I'll show you.
She vanished into the barn and walked out, carrying what looked to be a couple of small curved nails. She handed one to me. As the horses were eating, she moved toward one.
All you have to do is grab near the hoof and tug while you tap the back of his leg here, she said, demonstrating.
The horse, occupied with his hay, obediently lifted his hoof. She propped the hoof between her legs.
Then just dig out the dirt around the shoe. That's all there is to it.
I moved toward the horse beside her and tried to replicate her actions, but nothing happened. The horse was both exceedingly large and stubborn. I tugged again at the foot and tapped in the right place, then tugged and tapped some more. The horse continued to eat, ignoring my efforts.
He won't lift his foot, I complained.
She finished the hoof she was working on, then bent next to my horse. A tap and tug later, the hoof was in place between her legs.
Sure he will. He just knows you don't know what you're doing and that you're uncomfortable around him. You have to be confident about this.
She let the hoof drop, and I took her place, trying again. The horse ignored me once more.
Watch what I do, she said carefully.
I was watching,
I protested. She repeated the drill. The horse lifted his foot. A moment later, I mimicked her exactly, and the horse ignored me. Though I couldn't claim to read the mind of a horse, I had the strange notion that this one was enjoying my travails. Frustrated, I tapped and tugged relentlessly until finally, as if by magic, the horse's foot lifted. Despite the minimal nature of my accomplishment, I felt a surge of pride. For the first time since I'd arrived, Savannah laughed.
Good job. Now just scrape the mud out and go to the next hoof.
Savannah had finished the other six horses by the time I finished one. When we were done, she opened the gate and the horses trotted into the darkened pasture. I wasn't sure what to expect, but Savannah moved toward the shed. She had two shovels in hand.
Now it's time to clean up, she said, handing me a shovel.
Clean up?
The manure, she said. Otherwise, it can get pretty rank around here.
I took the shovel. You do this every day?
Life's a peach, isn't it?
She teased. She left again and returned with a wheelbarrow. As we began scooping the manure, the sliver of a moon began its rise over the treetops. We worked in silence, the clink and scrape of her shovel a steady rhythm that filled the air. In time, we both finished, and I leaned on my shovel, inspecting her. In the shadows of the barnyard, she seemed as lovely and elusive as a wraith. She said nothing, but I could feel her evaluating me.
Are you okay?
I finally asked.
Why are you here, John?
You already asked me that.
I know I did, she said. But you didn't really answer.
I studied her. No, I hadn't. I wasn't sure I could explain it myself and shifted my weight from one foot to the other.
I didn't know where else to go.
Surprising me, she nodded.
Uh-huh,
she acknowledged. It was the unqualified acceptance in her voice that made me go on.
I mean it, I said. In some ways, you were the best friend I ever had.
I could see her expression soften.
Okay,
she said. Her response reminded me of my father, and after she answered, perhaps she realized it as well. I forced myself to survey the property.
This is the ranch you dreamed of starting, isn't it?
I asked. Hope and Horses is for autistic kids, isn't it? She ran a hand through her hair, Tucking a strand behind her ear, she seemed pleased that I remembered.
Yes, she said, it is.
Is it everything you thought it would be?
She laughed and threw up her hands.
Sometimes, she said. But it's a lot harder than I thought it would be, and don't think for a second it earns enough to pay the bills. We both have jobs, and every day I realize that I didn't learn as much in school as I thought I did.
No?
She shook her head.
Some of the kids who show up here or at the center are difficult to reach.
She hesitated, trying to find the right words. Finally, she shook her head.
I guess I thought they'd all be like Alan, you know?
She looked up.
Do you remember when I told you about him?
When I nodded, she went on.
It turns out that Alan's situation was special. I don't know, maybe it was because he'd grown up on a ranch, but he adapted to this a lot more easily than most kids.
When she didn't continue, I gave her a quizzical look.
That's not the way I remember you telling it to me. From what I remember, Alan was terrified at first.
Yeah, I know, but still, he did get used to it, and that's the thing. I can't tell you how many kids we have here who never adapt at all, no matter how long we work with them. This isn't just a weekend thing. Some kids have come here regularly for more than a year. We work at the Developmental Evaluation Center, so we've spent a lot of time with most of the kids. And when we started the ranch, we insisted on opening it up to kids no matter how severe their condition. We felt it was an important commitment. But with some kids, I just wish I knew how to get through to them. Sometimes it feels like we're just spinning our wheels.
I could see Savannah cataloging her memories.
I don't mean that we feel like we're wasting time, she went on. Some kids really benefit from what we're doing. They come out here and spend a couple of weekends, and it's like a flower bud slowly blossoming into something beautiful, just like it did with Alan. It's like you can sense their mind opening up to new ideas and possibilities, and when they're riding with a great big smile on their faces, it's like nothing else matters in the world. It's a heady feeling, and you want it to happen over and over with every child who comes here. I used to think it was a matter of persistence, that we could help everyone, but we can't. Some of the kids never even get close to the horse, let alone ride it.
You know that's not your fault. I wasn't too thrilled with the idea of riding either, remember?
She giggled, sounding remarkably girlish.
Yeah, I remember. The first time you got on a horse, you were more scared than a lot of the kids.
No, I wasn't, I protested. And besides, Pepper was frisky.
Ha! She cried. Why do you think I let you ride him? He's just about the easiest horse you can imagine. I don't think he's ever so much as shimmied when someone rode him.
He was frisky, I insisted.
Spoken like a true rookie, she teased. But even if you're wrong, I'm touched that you still remember it.
Her playfulness summoned a tidal wave of memories.
Of course I remember, I said. Those were some of the best days of my life. I won't ever forget them.
Over her shoulder, I could see the dog wandering in the pasture.
Maybe that's why I'm still not married.
At my words, her gaze faltered.
I still remember them, too.
Do you?
Of course, she said. You might not believe it, but it's true.
The weight of her words hung heavy in the air.
Are you happy, Savannah?
I finally asked. She offered a wry smile.
Most of the time, aren't you?
I don't know, I said, which made her laugh again.
That's your standard answer, you know. When you're asked to look into yourself for the answer, it's like a reflex with you. It always has been. Why don't you ask me what you really wanted to ask?
What did I really want to ask?
Whether or not I love my husband. Isn't that what you mean?
For an instant, I was speechless, but I realized her instincts were correct. It was the real reason I was here.
Yes,
she said at last, reading my mind again.
I love him.
The unmistakable sincerity in her tone stung, but before I could dwell on it, she turned to face me again. Anxiety flickered in her expression, as if she were remembering something painful, but it passed quickly.
Have you eaten yet?
She asked. I was still trying to make sense of what I'd just seen. No, I said. Actually, I didn't have breakfast or lunch either. She shook her head.
I've got some leftover beef stew in the house. Do you have time for dinner?
Though I wondered again about her husband, I nodded. I'd like that, I said. We started toward the house and stopped when we reached a porch lined with muddy and worn cowboy boots. Savannah reached for my arm in a way that struck me as being remarkably easy and natural, using me for balance as she slipped off her boots. It was, perhaps, her touch that emboldened me to really look at her, and though I saw the mysteriousness and maturity that had always made her attractive, I noticed a hint of sadness and reticence as well. To my aching heart, the combination made her even more beautiful. 19. Her small kitchen was what one would expect from an old house that had probably been remodeled half a dozen times over the last century. Ancient linoleum floors that were peeling slightly near the walls, functional, unadorned white cabinets, thick with countless paint jobs over the years, and a stainless steel sink set beneath a wood-framed window that probably should have been replaced years ago. The countertop was cracking, and against one wall stood a wood stove as old as the house itself. In places, it was possible to see the modern world encroaching, a large refrigerator and dishwasher near the sink, a microwave-propped kitty corner near a half-empty bottle of red wine. In some ways, it reminded me of my dad's place. Savannah opened a cupboard and removed a wine glass.
Would you like a glass of wine?
I shook my head. I've never been much of a wine drinker. I was surprised when she didn't return the glass. Instead, she retrieved the half-empty bottle of wine and poured a glass. She set the glass on the table and took a seat before it. We sat at the table as Savannah took a sip. You've changed, I observed.
She shrugged. A lot of things have changed since I last saw you.
She said nothing more and set her glass back on the table. When she spoke again, her voice was subdued.
I never thought I'd be the kind of person who looked forward to a glass of wine in the evenings, but I do.
She began rotating the glass on the table, and I found myself wondering what had happened to her.
You know the funny thing?
She said.
I actually care how it tastes. When I had my first glass, I didn't know what was good or what was bad. Now, when it comes to buying, I've become pretty selective.
I didn't fully recognize the woman who sat before me, and I wasn't sure how to respond.
Don't get me wrong, she went on. I still remember everything my folks taught me, and I hardly ever have more than a glass a night. But since Jesus himself turned water into wine, I figure that it can't be much of a sin.
I smiled at her logic, recognizing how unfair it was to cling to the time capsule version I held of her. I wasn't asking.
I know, she said, but you were wondering.
For a moment, the only sound in the kitchen was the low hum of the refrigerator.
I'm sorry about your dad,
she said, tracing a crack in the tabletop.
I really am. I can't tell you how many times I've thought about him in the past few years.
Thank you, I said. Savannah began rotating her glass again, seemingly lost in the swirl of liquid.
Do you want to talk about it?
She asked. I wasn't sure I did, but as I leaned back in my chair, the words came surprisingly easily. I told her about my dad's first heart attack, and the second, and the visits we'd shared in the past couple of years. I told her about our growing friendship, and the comfort I felt with him, the walks that he began taking, and then eventually gave up. I recounted my final days with him, and the agony of committing him to an extended care facility. When I described the funeral and the photograph I found in the envelope, she reached for my hand.
I'm glad he saved it for you, she said, but I'm not surprised.
I was, I said, and she laughed. It was a reassuring sound.
She squeezed my hand.
I wish I'd have known. I would have liked to go to the funeral.
It wasn't much.
He didn't have to be. He was your dad, and that's all that matters.
She hesitated before releasing my hand and took another sip of wine.
Are you ready to eat?
She asked.
I don't know, I said, flushing at the memory of her earlier comment.
She leaned forward with a grin.
How about I heat you up a plate of stew and we'll see what happens?
Is it any good? I asked. I mean, when I knew you before, you never mentioned that you knew how to cook.
It's our special family recipe, she said,
pretending to be offended.
But I've got to be honest. My mom made it. She brought it over yesterday.
The truth comes out, I said.
That's the funny thing about the truth, she said. It usually does.
She rose and opened the refrigerator, bending over as she scanned the shelves. I found myself wondering about the ring on her finger and where her husband was as she pulled out the Tupperware. She scooped some of the stew into a bowl and placed it in the microwave.
Do you want anything else with that? How about some bread and butter?
That would be great, I agreed.
A few minutes later, the meal was spread before me, and the aroma reminded me for the first time of how hungry I actually was. Surprising me, Savannah took her place again, holding her glass of wine.
Aren't you gonna eat?
I'm not hungry, she said. Actually, I haven't been eating much lately.
She took a sip as I took my first bite, and I let her comment pass.
You're right, I said. It's delicious.
She smiled.
Mom's a good cook. You'd think I would have learned more about cooking, but I didn't. I was always too busy, too much studying when I was young, and then lately, too much remodeling.
She motioned toward the living room.
It's an old house. I know it doesn't look like it, but we've done a lot of work in the past couple of years.
It looks great.
You're just being polite, but I appreciate it, she smiled. You should have seen the place when I moved in. It was kind of like the barn, you know? We needed a new roof, but it's funny. No one ever thinks of roofs when they're imagining what to remodel. It's one of those things that everyone expects a house to have, but never thinks might one day need replacing. Almost everything we've done falls into that category. Heat pumps, thermal windows, fixing the termite damage. There were a lot of long days.
She wore a dreamy expression on her face.
We did most of the work ourselves. Like with the kitchen here, I know we need new cabinets and flooring, but when we moved in, there were puddles in the living room and bedrooms every time it rained. What were we supposed to do? We had to prioritize. And one of the first things we did was to tear all the old shingles from the roof. It must have been 100 degrees, and I'm up there with a shovel, scraping shingles off, getting blisters. But it just felt right, you know? Two young people starting out in the world, working together and repairing their home. There was such a sense of togetherness about it. It was the same thing when we did the floor in the living room. It must have taken a couple of weeks to sand it down and get it level again. We stained it and added a layer of varnish, and when we finally walked across it, it felt like we'd laid the foundation for the rest of our lives.
You make it sound almost romantic.
It was, in a way,
she agreed. She tucked a strand of hair behind her ear.
But lately, it's not so romantic. Now, it's just getting old.
I laughed unexpectedly, then coughed and found myself reaching for a glass that wasn't there. She pushed back from her chair. "Let me get you some water," she said. She filled a glass from the faucet and placed it before me. As I drank, I could feel her watching me.
"What?"
I asked. "I just can't get over how different you look."
"Me?"
I found it hard to believe.
"Yeah, you," she insisted. "You're older somehow."
"I am older."
"I know, but it's not that. It's your eyes. They're more serious than they used to be. Like they've seen things they shouldn't have. Weary, somehow."
To this I said nothing, but when she saw my expression, she shook her head, looking embarrassed.
"I shouldn't have said that. I can only imagine what you've been through in the past few years."
I ate another bite of stew, thinking about her comment.
"I left Iraq in early 2004, I said. "I've been in Germany ever since. Only a small part of the army is ever there at any one time, and we rotate through. I'll probably end up going back, but I don't know when. Hopefully, things will have calmed down by then."
"Weren't you supposed to be out by now?"
"I re-upped again," I said. "There wasn't any reason not to."
We both knew the reason why, and she nodded.
"How long now?"
"I'm in until 2007.
"And then?"
"I'm not sure. I might stay in for a few more years, or maybe I'll go to college. Who knows, I might even pick up a degree in special education. I've heard great things about the field."
Her smile was strangely sad, and for a while neither of us said anything.
"How long have you been married?" I asked.
She shifted in her seat.
"It'll be 2 years next November."
"Were you married here?"
"As if I had a choice," she rolled her eyes. "My mom was really into the whole perfect wedding thing. I know I'm their only daughter, but in hindsight, I would have been just as happy with something a lot smaller. 100 guests would have been perfect."
"You consider that small?"
"Compared with what we ended up with, yeah. There weren't enough seats in the church for everyone, and my dad keeps reminding me that he'll be paying it off for years. He's just teasing, of course. Half the guests were friends of my parents. But I guess that's what you get when you get married in your hometown. Everyone from the mailman to the barber gets an invitation."
"But you're glad to be back home."
"It's comfortable here. My parents are close by, and I need that, especially now."
She didn't elaborate, content to let her comment stand. I wondered about that and 100 other things as I rose from the table and brought my plate to the sink. After rinsing it, I heard her call out behind me.
"Just leave it there. I haven't unloaded the dishwasher yet. I'll get it later. Do you want anything else, though? My mom left a couple of pies on the counter."
"How about a glass of milk?" I said.
As she started to rise, I added, "I can get it. Just point me to the glasses."
"In the cupboard by the sink."
I pulled a glass from the shelf and went to the refrigerator. Milk was on the top shelf. On the shelves below were at least a dozen Tupperware containers filled with food. I poured a glass and returned to the table.
"What's going on, Savannah?"
With my words, she came back to me. "What do you mean?"
"Your husband," I said.
"What about him?"
"When can I meet him?"
Instead of answering, Savannah rose from the table with her wine glass. She poured the remains into the sink, then retrieved a coffee cup and a box of tea.
"You've already met him,"
she said, turning around. She squared her shoulders.
"It's Tim."
I could hear the spoon tapping against the cup as Savannah sat across from me again.
"How much of this do you want to hear?"
she murmured, staring into her teacup.
"All of it,"
I said. I leaned back in my chair.
"Or none of it. I'm not sure yet."
She snorted.
"I guess that makes sense."
I brought my hands together.
"When did it start?"
"I'm not sure," she said. "I know that sounds crazy, but it didn't happen like you probably think. It wasn't as if either of us planned it."
She set her spoon on the table.
"But to give you some kind of answer, I guess it started in early 2002.
A few months after I'd re-upped, I realized. 6 months before my father had his first heart attack, and right around the time I noticed that her letters to me had begun to change.
You know, we've been friends. Even though he was a graduate student, we ended up having a couple of classes in the same building during my last year in college, and afterwards we'd have coffee or end up studying together. It's not like we dated or even held hands. Tim knew I was in love with you, but he was there, you know? He listened when I talked about how much I missed you and how hard it was to be apart, and it was hard. I thought you'd be home by then.
When she looked up, her eyes were filled with, what, regret? I couldn't tell.
Anyway, we spent a lot of time together, and he was good at consoling me whenever I got down. He'd always remind me that you'd be back on leave before I knew it, and I can't tell you how much I wanted to see you again. And then your dad got sick. I know you had to be with him. I would never have forgiven you if you hadn't stayed by his side. But it wasn't what we needed. I know how selfish that sounds, and I hate myself for even thinking it. I just felt like fate was conspiring against us.
She put her spoon in the tea and stirred again, collecting her thoughts.
Anyway, that fall, right after I finished up with all my classes and moved back home to work at the Developmental Evaluation Center here in town, Tim's parents were in a horrible accident. They were driving back from Asheville when they lost control of their car and swerved into oncoming traffic on the highway. A semi ended up hitting them. The driver of the truck wasn't hurt, but both of Tim's parents died on impact. Tim had to quit school. He was trying to get his PhD so he could come back here to take care of Alan.
She paused.
It was awful for Tim. Not only was he trying to come to terms with the loss, he adored his parents, but Alan was inconsolable. He screamed all the time, and he began pulling out his hair. The only one who could stop him from hurting himself was Tim, but it took all the energy Tim had. I guess that's when I first started coming over here, you know, to help out.
When I frowned, she added,
this was Tim's parents' house, where Tim and Alan grew up.
As soon as she said it, the memory came back. Of course it was Tim's. She'd once told me that Tim lived on the ranch next to hers.
We just ended up consoling each other. I tried to help him, and he tried to help me. And we both tried to help Alan, and little by little, I guess, we began to fall in love.
For the first time, she met my eyes.
I know you want to be angry with Tim or me. Probably both of us. And I guess we deserve it. But you don't know what it was like back then. So much was going on. It was just so emotional all the time. I felt guilty about what was happening. Tim felt guilty. But after a while, it just began to feel like we were a couple already. Tim started working at the same developmental evaluation center where I did, and then decided that he wanted to start a weekend ranch program for autistic kids. His parents always wanted him to do that, so I signed on to work on the ranch too. And after that, we were together almost all the time. Setting up the ranch gave us both something to focus on, and it helped Alan too. He loves horses. And there was so much to do that he gradually got used to the fact that his parents weren't around. It's like we were all leaning on each other. Anyway, he proposed later that year.
When she stopped, I turned away, trying to digest her words. We sat in silence for a while, each of us wrestling with our thoughts.
Anyway, that's the story,
she concluded.
I don't know how much more you want to hear.
I wasn't sure either. Does Alan still live here? I asked.
He's got a room upstairs. Actually, it's the same room he's always had. It's not as hard as it sounds, though. After he's finished feeding and brushing the horses, he usually spends most of his time alone. He loves video games. He can play for hours. Lately, I haven't been able to get him to stop. He'd play all night long if I'd let him.
Is he here now?
She shook her head.
No, she said. Right now, he's with Tim.
Where?
Before she could answer, the dog scratched insistently at the door, and Savannah got up to open it. The dog padded in, tongue out and tail still wagging. He trotted toward me and nuzzled my hand.
He likes me, I said.
Savannah was still near the door.
She likes everyone. Her name's Molly. Worthless as a guard dog, but sweeter than candy. Just try to avoid the drool. She'll drip all over you if you let her.
I glanced at my jeans.
I can see that.
Savannah motioned over her shoulder.
Listen, I just realized I've still got to put some things away. It's supposed to rain tonight. It shouldn't take long.
I noted that she hadn't answered the question about Tim, nor, I realized, did she plan to.
Need a hand?
Not really, but you're welcome to come. It's a beautiful night.
I followed her out, and Molly trotted ahead of us, completely forgetting that she'd just begged to come inside. When an owl broke from the trees, Molly galloped into the darkness and vanished. Savannah pulled on her boots again.
Always something to do, huh?
I asked.
You can't imagine.
We walked toward the barn. I thought about everything she'd told me, and wondered again why I'd come. I wasn't sure if I was happy that she'd married Tim, since they'd seemed so perfect for each other, or upset for exactly the same reason. Nor was I glad that I finally knew the truth. Somehow I realized it was easier not to know. All at once, I simply felt tired. And yet, there was something I knew she wasn't telling me. I heard it in her voice, in the hint of sadness it wouldn't go away. As the darkness surrounded us, I was acutely aware of how close we were walking together, and I wondered whether she felt the same. If she did, she gave no sign. The horses were mere shadows in the distance, shapes without recognizable form. Savannah retrieved a couple of bridles and brought them to the barn, hanging them on a couple of pegs. While she did, I collected the shovels we'd been using and set them with the rest of the tools. On our way out, she made sure to shut the gate. Glancing at my watch, I saw it was nearly 10 o'clock. It was late, and we were both conscious of the hour.
I guess I should probably get going, I said. It's a small town. I don't want to start any rumors.
You're probably right.
Molly wandered up, appearing from nowhere, and sat between us. When she lapped at Savannah's leg, she stepped to the side.
Where are you staying?
She asked.
Something or other motor court just off the highway.
Her nose crinkled, if only for an instant.
I know the place.
It's kind of a dive, I admitted.
She smiled.
I can't say I'm surprised. You always did have a way of finding the most unique places.
Like the shrimp shack?
Exactly.
I pushed my hands into my pockets, wondering whether this was the last time I'd ever see her. If so, it struck me as absurdly anticlimactic. I couldn't let it end in small talk.
Do you ever think about the times we were together?
Of course I do. I'll never forget them.
I nodded. On the road out front, the headlights of an approaching car flashed over the property as it sped past the house.
I guess that's it then, I said, at a loss. It was good seeing you again.
You too, John. I'm glad you came by.
I nodded again. When she looked away, I took it as my cue to leave.
Goodbye, I said.
Bye.
I turned from the porch and started toward my car, dazed at the thought it was really and truly over. I wasn't sure I'd expected anything different, but the finality brought to the surface all those feelings I'd been repressing since I'd read her last letter. I was opening the door when I heard her call out, "Hey, John?"
"Yeah?"
She stepped off the porch and started toward me.
"Are you gonna be around tomorrow?"
As she drew near, her face half in shadow, I knew with certainty that I was still in love with her. Despite the letter, despite her husband, despite the fact that we could never be together now.
Why?
I asked.
I was wondering if you'd like to drop by. Around 10. I'm sure Tim would like to see you.
I was shaking my head even before she finished. I'm not sure that's such a good idea.
Could you do it for me?
I knew she wanted me to see that Tim was still the same man I remembered. And in a sense, I knew she was asking because she wanted forgiveness. Still, she reached out to take my hand.
Please, it would mean a lot to me.
Despite the warmth of her hand, I didn't want to come back. I didn't want to see Tim. I didn't want to see the two of them together or sit around the table pretending that all seemed right in the world. But there was something plaintive about her request that made it impossible to turn her down.
Okay,
I said. 10 o'clock.
Thank you.
A moment later, she turned to leave. I stayed in place watching her climb onto the porch before I got in the car. I turned the key and backed out. Savannah turned on the porch, waving one last time. I waved, then headed out to the road, her image growing smaller in the rearview mirror. Watching her, I felt a sudden dryness in my throat, not because she was married to Tim and not at the thought of seeing them both tomorrow. It came from watching Savannah as I was driving away, standing on her porch, crying into her hands. 20. The following morning, Savannah was standing on the porch, and she waved as I pulled in the drive. She stepped forward as I brought the car to a stop. I half expected Tim to appear in the doorway behind her, but he was nowhere to be seen.
Hey,
she said, touching my arm.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah,
I said, giving a reluctant shrug. I thought I saw a flash of understanding in her eyes before she asked,
Did you sleep okay?
Not really.
At that, she gave a wry smile.
Are you ready?
As I'll ever be.
Okay, she said. Just let me get the keys, unless you'd like to drive.
I didn't catch her meaning at first.
We're leaving?
I nodded toward the house. I thought we were going to see Tim.
We are, she said. He's not here.
Where is he?
It was as if she hadn't heard me.
Do you want to drive?
Yeah, I guess so,
I said, not bothering to hide my confusion, but somehow knowing she'd clear things up when she was ready. I opened the door for her and went around the driver's side to slide behind the wheel. Savannah was running her hand over the dashboard as if trying to prove to herself it was real.
I remember this car.
Her expression was nostalgic.
It's your dad's, right? Wow. I can't believe it's still running.
He didn't drive all that much,
I said. Just to work in the store.
Still?
She put on her seatbelt, and despite myself, I wondered whether she'd spent the night alone.
Which way?
I asked.
At the road, take a left, she said. Head toward town.
Neither of us spoke. Instead, she stared out the passenger window with her arms crossed. I might have been offended, but there was something in her expression that told me her preoccupation had nothing to do with me, and I left her alone with her thoughts. On the outskirts of town, she shook her head as if suddenly conscious of how quiet it was in the car.
I'm sorry, she said. I guess my company leaves a lot to be desired.
It's okay, I said, trying to mask my growing curiosity.
She pointed toward the windshield.
At the next corner, take a right.
Where are we going?
She didn't answer right away. Instead, she turned and gazed out the passenger window.
The hospital,
she finally said. I followed her through seemingly endless corridors, finally stopping at the visitor's check-in. Behind the desk, an elderly volunteer held out a clipboard. Savannah reached for the pen and began signing her name automatically.
You holding up, Savannah?
Trying,
Savannah murmured.
It'll all turn out okay. You've got the whole town praying for him.
Thanks, Savannah said. She handed back the clipboard, then looked at me.
He's on the third floor, she explained. The elevators are just down the hall.
I followed her, my stomach churning. We reached the elevator just as someone was getting off and stepped inside. When the doors closed, it felt as if I were in a tomb. The elevator doors opened when we reached the third floor, and Savannah started down the hallway with me trailing behind. She stopped in front of a room with a door propped open and then turned to face me.
I think I should probably go in first, she said. Can you wait here?
Of course. She flashed her appreciation, then turned away. She drew a long breath before entering the room.
Hey, honey,
I heard her call out, her tone bright.
You doing okay?
I didn't hear any more than that for the next couple of minutes. Instead, I stood in the hallway, absorbing the same sterile, impersonal surroundings I'd noticed while visiting with my father. The air reeked of a nameless disinfectant, and I watched as an orderly wheeled a cart of food into a room down the hall. Halfway up the corridor, I saw a group of nurses clustered in the station. Behind the door across the hallway, I could hear someone retching.
Okay,
Savannah said, poking her head out. Beneath her brave appearance, I could still see her sadness.
You can come in. I told them to expect a surprise.
I followed her in, bracing myself for the worst. Tim sat propped up in the bed with an IV connected to his arm. He looked exhausted, and his skin was so pale that it was almost translucent. He'd lost even more weight than my father had, and as I stared at him, all I could think was that he was dying. Only the kindness in his eyes was unaffected. On the other side of the room was a young man, late teens or early 20s maybe, rolling his head from side to side, and I knew immediately it was Alan. The room was crowded with flowers, dozens of bouquets and greeting cards stacked on every available tabletop and ledge. Savannah sat on the bed beside her husband and reached for his hand.
Hey, Tim, I said.
He looked too tired to smile, but he managed.
Hey, John. Good to see you again.
You too, I said. How are you? As soon as I said it, I knew how ridiculous it sounded. Tim must have been used to it, for he didn't flinch.
I'm okay, he said. I'm feeling better now.
I nodded. Alan continued to roll his head, and I found myself watching him, feeling like an intruder in events I wished I could have avoided.
This is my brother Alan, he said.
Hi, Alan. When Alan didn't respond, I heard Tim whisper to him,
Hey, Alan, it's okay. He's not a doctor. He's a friend. Go say hello.
It took a few seconds, but Alan finally rose from his seat. He walked stiffly across the room, and though he wouldn't meet my eyes, he extended his hand.
Hi, I'm Alan,
he said, in a surprisingly deep monotone. Nice to meet you, I said, taking his hand. It was limp. He pumped once, then let go and went back to his seat.
There's a chair if you'd like to sit, Tim said.
I wandered into the room and took a seat. Before I could even ask, I heard Tim already answering the question on my mind.
Melanoma, he said, in case you're wondering.
But you'll be okay, right? Alan's head rolled even faster, and he began to slap his thighs. Savannah turned away. I already knew the answer and wished I could take it back.
That's what the doctors are for, Tim replied. I'm in good hands.
I knew the answer was more for Alan than me, and Alan began to calm down. Tim closed his eyes, then opened them again, as if trying to concentrate his strength.
I'm glad to see you made it back in one piece, he said. I prayed for you the whole time you were in Iraq.
Thank you, I said.
What have you been up to? Still in the army, I guess?
He nodded toward my crew cut, and I ran my hand over it. Yeah, seems like I'm becoming a lifer.
Good,
he said.
The army needs people like you.
I said nothing. The scene struck me as surreal, like watching yourself in a dream. Tim turned to Savannah.
Sweetheart, would you walk with Alan and get him a soda? He hasn't had anything to drink since earlier this morning, and if you can, maybe you can talk him into eating?
Sure,
she said. She kissed him on the forehead and rose from the bed. She stopped in the doorway.
Come on, Alan. Let's get something to drink, okay?
To me, it seemed as if Alan were slowly processing the words. Finally, he got up and followed Savannah. She placed a gentle hand on his back on the way out the door. When they were gone, Tim faced me again.
This whole thing is really hard on Alan. He's not taking it well.
How can he?
Don't let the rolling of his head fool you, though. It's got nothing to do with autism or his intelligence. It's more like a tick he gets when he's nervous. The same thing when he started slapping his thighs. He knows what's going on, but it affects him in ways that usually make other people uncomfortable.
I clasped my hands. It didn't make me uncomfortable, I said. My dad had his things, too. He's your brother, and it's obvious that he's worried. It makes sense. Tim smiled.
That's kind of you to say. A lot of people get frightened. Not me, I said, shaking my head. I know I could take him.
Remarkably, he laughed, although it seemed to take a lot out of him.
I'm sure you could, he said. Alan's gentle. Probably too gentle. He won't even swat flies.
I nodded, recognizing that all this small talk was just his way of making me feel more comfortable. It wasn't working.
When did you find out? A year ago. A mole on the back of my calf started to itch, and when I scratched at it, it started to bleed. Of course, I didn't think much of it then, until it bled again the next time I scratched at it. 6 months ago, I went to the doctor. That was on a Friday. I had surgery on Saturday and started interferon on Monday. Now, I'm here.
You've been in the hospital all this time?
No, I'm here only off and on. Usually, interferon is done on an outpatient basis, but me and interferon don't get along. I don't tolerate it that well, so now they do it here in case I get too sick and become dehydrated like I did yesterday.
I'm sorry, I said.
I am too.
I looked around the room, my eyes landing on a cheaply framed bedside photo of Tim and Savannah standing with their arms around Alan.
How's Savannah holding up? I asked. Like you'd expect.
Tim traced a crease in his hospital sheet with his free hand.
She's been great. Not only with me, but with the ranch, too. She's had to handle everything lately, but she never complains about it. And whenever she's around me, she tries to be strong. She keeps telling me that it's all going to work out.
He formed the ghost of a smile.
Half the time, I even believe her.
When I didn't respond, he struggled to sit up higher in the bed. He winced, but the pain passed, and he became himself again.
Savannah told me you had dinner at the ranch last night.
Yeah,
I said.
I'll bet she was glad to see you. I know she's always felt bad that it ended the way it did, and so did I. I owe you an apology.
Don't, I raised my hands. It's okay. He formed a wry grin.
You're only saying that because I'm sick, and we both know it. If I was healthy, you'd probably want to break my nose again.
Maybe, I admitted, and though he laughed again, this time I could hear the sound of sickness in it.
I deserve it,
he said, oblivious to my thoughts.
I know you might not believe it, but I feel bad about what happened. I know you two really cared about each other.
I leaned forward, propping myself on my elbows.
Water under the bridge, I said.
I didn't believe it,
and he didn't believe me when I said it, but it was enough for both of us to put it to rest.
What brought you here after all this time?
My dad passed away, I said, last week. Despite his condition, his face reflected genuine sympathy.
I'm sorry, John. I know how much he meant to you. Was it sudden?
At the end, it always is, but he'd been sick for a while.
It doesn't make it any easier.
I found myself wondering whether he was referring just to me or to Savannah and Alan as well. Savannah told me you lost both your parents.
A car accident, he said, drawing out the words. It was unbelievable. We just had dinner with them a couple of nights before, and the next thing you know, I'm making arrangements for their funeral. It still doesn't seem real. Whenever I'm at home, I keep expecting to see my mom in the kitchen or my dad puttering around the garden. He hesitated, and I knew he was replaying those images. At last, he shook his head.
Did that happen to you when you were home?
Every single minute. He leaned his head back. I guess it's been a rough couple years for both of us. It's enough to test your faith.
Even for you?
He gave a half-hearted grin. I said test. I didn't say that it ended it.
No, I don't suppose it would have.
I heard a nurse's voice approaching, and though I thought she was going to enter, she passed by on her way to another room.
I'm glad you came to see Savannah, he said. I know it sounds trite, considering all that you two have been through, but she needs a friend right now.
My throat was tight.
Yeah, was all I could think to say.
He grew quiet, and I knew he would say no more about it. In time, he drifted off to sleep, and I sat there watching him, my mind curiously blank.
I'm sorry I didn't tell you yesterday, Savannah said to me an hour later. When she and Alan had returned to the room to find Tim sleeping, she'd motioned for me to follow her downstairs to the cafeteria. I was surprised to see you, and I knew I should have said something, but every time I tried, I just couldn't.
Two cups of tea were on the table, since neither of us felt like eating. Savannah lifted her cup and set it back down again.
It had just been one of those days, you know? I'd spent hours in the hospital, and the nurses kept giving me those pitiful looks, and, well, they just feel like they're killing me little by little. I know that sounds ridiculous, considering what Tim is going through, but it's so hard to watch him get sick. I hate it. I know I have to be there to support him, and the thing is, I want to be there, but it's always worse than I expect. He was so sick after his treatment yesterday that I thought he was dying. He couldn't stop vomiting, and when nothing else had come up, he just kept dry heaving. Every 5 or 10 minutes, he'd start to moan and move around the bed trying to prevent it, but there was nothing he could do. I'd hold him and comfort him, but I can't even begin to describe how helpless it made me feel.
She lifted her bag of tea in and out of the water.
It's like that every time, she said.
I fiddled with the handle of my cup. I wish I knew what to say.
There's nothing you can say, and I know that. That's why I'm talking to you, because I know that you can handle it. I don't really have anyone else. None of my friends can even relate to what I'm going through. My mom and dad have been great, kind of. I know they do anything that I ask, and they're always offering to help. And Mom brings over our meals. But every time she drops off the food, she's just a bundle of nerves. She's always on the verge of crying. It's like she's terrified of saying or doing anything wrong. So when she's trying to help, it's like I have to support her too instead of the other way around. Added to everything else, it's almost too much sometimes. I hate to say that about her because she's doing her best and she's my mom and I love her. But I just wish she'd be stronger, you know?
Remembering her mother, I nodded. How about your dad?
The same, but in a different way. He avoids the topic. He doesn't want to talk about it at all. When we're together, he talks about the ranch or my job. Anything but Tim. It's like he's trying to make up for Mom's incessant worrying. But he never asks what's been going on or how I'm holding up.
She shook her head.
And then there's Alan. Tim's so good with him, and I like to think I'm getting better with him, but still, there are times when he starts hurting himself or breaking things, and I just end up crying because I don't know what to do. Don't get me wrong, I try, but I'm not Tim, and we both know it.
Her eyes held mine for a moment before I looked away. I took a sip of tea, trying to imagine what her life was like now.
Did Tim tell you what's going on with his melanoma?
A little, I said. Not enough to know the whole story. He told me he found a mole and that it was bleeding. He put it off for a while, then finally went to see a doctor. She nodded.
It's one of those crazy things, isn't it? I mean, if Tim spent a lot of time in the sun, maybe I could have understood it. But it was on the back of his leg. You know him. Can you imagine him in Bermuda shorts? He's hardly ever worn shorts, even at the beach. And he's always the one who nagged us about wearing sunscreen. He doesn't drink. He doesn't smoke. He's careful about what he eats. But for whatever reason, he got melanoma. They cut out the area around the mole, and because of its size, they took out 18 of his lymph nodes. Out of the 18, one was positive for melanoma. He started interferon. That's the standard treatment, and it lasts a full year. And we tried to stay optimistic. But then things started going wrong, first with the interferon, and then a few weeks after surgery, he got cellulitis near the groin incision.
When I frowned, she caught herself.
Sorry. I'm just so used to talking to doctors these days. Cellulitis is a skin infection, and Tim's was pretty serious. He spent 10 days in the intensive care unit for that. I thought I was going to lose him. But he's a fighter, you know? He got through it and continued with his treatment. But last month we found cancerous lesions near the site of his original melanoma. That, of course, meant another round of surgery. But even worse, it meant that the interferon probably wasn't working as well as it could. So he got a PET scan and an MRI, and sure enough, they found some cancerous cells in his lung.
She stared into her coffee cup. I felt speechless and drained, and for a long time, we were quiet. I'm sorry, I finally whispered. My words brought her back.
I'm not going to give up, she said, her voice beginning to crack. He's such a good man. He's sweet, and he's patient, and I love him so much. It's just not fair. We haven't even been married for 2 years.
She looked at me and took a few deep breaths, trying to regain her composure.
He needs to get out of here, out of this hospital. All they can do here is interferon, and like I said, it's not working as well as it should. He needs to go someplace like MD Anderson or the Mayo Clinic or Johns Hopkins. There's cutting-edge research going on in those places. If interferon isn't doing the job like it should, there might be another drug they can add. They're always trying different combinations, even if they're experimental. They're doing biochemotherapy and clinical trials at other places. MD Anderson is even supposed to start testing a vaccine in November. Not for prevention like most vaccines, but for treatment. And the preliminary data has shown good results. I want him to be part of that trial.
So go, I urged. She gave a short laugh.
It's not that easy.
Why, it sounds pretty clear to me. Once he's out of here, you hop in the car and go.
Our insurance won't pay for it, she said. Not now, anyway. He's getting the appropriate standard of care. And believe it or not, the insurance company has been pretty responsive so far. They've paid for all the hospitalizations, all the interferon, and all the extras without hassle. They've even assigned me a personal caseworker, and believe me, she's sympathetic to our plight. But there's nothing she can do, since our doctor thinks it's best that we give the interferon a little more time. No insurance company in the world will pay for experimental treatments, and no insurer will agree to pay for treatments outside the standard of care. especially if they're in other states and are attempting new things on the off chance that they might work.
Sue them if you have to.
John, our insurer hasn't batted an eyelash at all the costs for intensive care and extra hospitalizations, and the reality is that Tim is getting the appropriate treatment. The thing is, I can't prove that Tim would get better in another place receiving alternate treatments. I think it might help him. I hope it will help him. But no one knows for sure that it would.
She shook her head.
Anyway, even if I did sue and the insurance company ended up paying for everything I demanded, that would take time. And that's what we don't have. She sighed. My point is, it's not just a money problem. It's a time problem.
How much are you talking about?
A lot. And if Tim ends up in the hospital with an infection and in the intensive care unit like he has before, I can't even begin to guess. More than I could ever hope to pay, that's for sure.
What are you gonna do?
Get the money, she said. I don't have a choice. And the community's been supportive. As soon as word about Tim got out, there was a segment on the local news and the newspaper did a story and people all over town have promised to start collecting money. They set up a special bank account and everything. My parents helped. The place we worked helped. Parents of some of the kids we worked with helped. I've heard that they've even got jars out in a lot of the businesses.
My mind flashed to the sight of the jar at the end of the bar in the pool hall the day I arrived in Lenore. I'd thrown in a couple of dollars, but suddenly it felt completely inadequate. Are you close?
I don't know.
She shook her head as if unwilling to think about it.
All this just started happening a little while ago, and since Tim had his treatment, I've been here and at the ranch. But we're talking about a lot of money.
She pushed aside her cup of tea and offered a sad smile.
I don't even know why I'm telling you this. I mean, I can't guarantee that any of those other places can even help him. All I can tell you is that...